I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We now have a quorum, so if Representative Mariani, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the minutes of April 19th.
Thank you.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion?
Thank you.
Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. We're going to change the agenda a little bit this morning from what was printed. We'll still take Representative Falk's bill first, and then we'll take Representative Kelly, and finally Representative Fortman. That's the omnibus energy bill, and that one will take a fair amount of time. Plan is to adjourn probably close to about 11:20. The Rules Committee will be meeting, and then the House session starts at noon. So depending on the amount of discussion on the first two bills, we'll take the balance of the time in for discussion of the Omnibus Energy Bill. So Representative Falk, if you're ready, and Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I'd like to move House File 879 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us, so the bill is properly before the committee. Representative Falk, if you'd care to walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius, and thank you, committee members. Members, this is a simple bill. It restores the funding to the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment at the University of Minnesota through calendar year 2014. This had been an appropriation of $5 million per year out of the Renewable Energy Development Fund. It's not state dollars, but that is the money that is collected from the CAS storage at the two nuclear facilities in the state of Minnesota. And one of the challenges with this is this appropriation, if you want to call it that, or this expenditure from that fund, was changed in the last biennium to more of a competitive grant process. And as a result of that uncertainty, it's caused the University of Minnesota to go and operate in a way that really doesn't facilitate the ongoing continuation or operation of this program, which really is one of the flagships in the nation. And perhaps it's a different philosophical viewpoint of how we should be allocating these resources, but it's one that I believe we should continue to fund. If you would allow me the indulgence here, I actually have a copy of the 2012 annual report from the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment, and this was one of the things that former Representative Bill Hilty worked very diligently to establish. But I'd like to read the executive summary, and it's kind of a note from the director, and I think it helps illustrate very clearly what the challenge is that we are facing if we continue or we cease to fund this program. Says a note from the director, whose name is Richard Hemmingson. It is with deeply mixed emotions that I write the preface to this 2012 and unfortunately final IRE annual report. In the wake of the decision of the 2012 legislature to discontinue direct funding from the Xcel Energy Renewable Energy Development Fund to IRE, the decision has been made to sunset the program. Many of you have followed the development of this innovative program at the University of Minnesota from early meetings in the fall-winter of 2003-04 to numerous educational symposia, to the highly successful annual E3 conference, to ever-increasing interactions with University of Minnesota faculty. Certainly the time for the university and the state was ripe for the launch of this compelling program. With the foresight of key leadership and with broad bipartisan legislative support, significant resources from the Xcel ratepayer-supported SIP and RDF funds have been strategically invested to propel renewable energy technology development in Minnesota. I've been privileged to serve the university and the state as director of these efforts, working closely with visionary administrative and faculty leadership from the university, with forward-thinking legislators and agency officials, and with key business and industry partners. These efforts have collectively put Minnesota on the map with respect to innovative renewable energy technology development. Some of the metrics of this success are summarized later in this report, so I won't repeat them here. It is, however, safe to assert that while there may be other universities with deeper bench strength in certain areas of renewable energy technologies, none has the depth and breadth of faculty expertise of the University of Minnesota. I'm proud that IRE has had a major role in sharpening that profile. Why Minnesota? The answer is pretty straightforward. It's our resources. We're not blessed with any fossil-based energy sources to exploit. We are, however, blessed with an abundance of quote-unquote traditional pre-petroleum energy resources at our disposal. Biomass, wind, solar, geothermal, etc. Along with innovative policy development and deep reservoirs of capacity and expertise in our academic, business, government, and NGO community. Driven by our mission, IRE sought to exploit their strength to significantly advance the renewable energy economy for Minnesota. I believe those efforts, while unfinished and prematurely coming to an end, were successful. It is my fervent hope, and frankly, it is my expectation that the state and the university will soon acknowledge that these opportunities are simply too compelling and too costly to toss aside, and that in the not-too-distant future, we'll come to the collective realization that, quote, IRE had it right. Ultimately, we will, in my judgment, quote, go back to the future and continue to build on the legacy that IRE leaves our community. It's the right thing to do for our economy, for our environment, and for our future. Sincerely, Richard Hemmingson, IRE Founding Director. One of the reasons why this is such an important program to fund is that we have built up some expertise in faculty and professors that few other places in the world have. And there's a limited number of these talented individuals, and if we lose them, they will go someplace else. And these are some of the folks that are driving innovation in the world of renewable energy development, and they are good partners for a lot of our companies, whether it's 3M or other technology companies. And so as we either wind this program down or turn it into more of a competitive grant-based program that Excel administers, and we have to ask the university to go and apply for those grants, there's less certainty and there's less ability to keep these talented individuals at the University of Minnesota. With that, we lose those folks, their expertise, and the potential innovations that they develop. I also have with me Mr. Todd Iverson from the University of Minnesota, and he's got one of the individuals that has worked with the program. And if the committee is amenable, I'd ask them to come down and give some comments, too. But what this bill provides is basically a two-year ongoing window of funding to go and help figure out additional ways to either leverage dollars or to go and find more ways to keep the program going. My biggest fear is that we lose some of these highly talented individuals. They go someplace else and we lose that competitive advantage. And that's something that I do not want to see happen.
Representative Falk, what we generally do on the testimony side is if members of the committee have specific questions. Why don't we say that he's available if there would be any specific
that works
questions.
For me, Mr.
That's
Chairman.
The way we generally work. And this morning we have just a very few minutes. are you ready for discussion?
I am.
We have one member that's indicated he has a question. But before we begin, because people are still filing in the room, I want to acknowledge that today is Earth Day. And one of the reasons that we have three energy bills before us this morning is in recognition of Earth Day. So I wanted to say, I assume we have a larger crowd than we normally do here, that many of you are here as a result of it being Earth Day and the rally here at the Capitol. So just want to say welcome. And with that, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over in the corner today.
I'm usually down at the other end.
I got here early enough to get a prime seat, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Just for some background, further background, Representative Falk's bill. Several years ago, bipartisanly, we asked the legislative auditor to take a look at the Renewable Development Fund because over the years it had been kicked back and forth, the money, the appropriations from that fund, depending on who was in the chair of a certain committee, it appeared. So we asked bipartisanly for the auditor to take a look and give us a straight-up look at how the RDF fund was collected, administered, what its original intent was, and so on and so forth. So without passing any judgment on any of the programs that money was being appropriated for, the auditor made a suggestion that we revisit the issue because of the original foundations of the Renewable Development Fund and its mandate that's laid on one company in particular and the ratepayers of that company had never actually been executed in statute. Basically, it always has been a private checking account, and they've been good enough to just kind of do whatever the legislature had as its whim of the moment, and they would write checks out of that account, and somehow they made it work, I guess, just out of their good intentions. One of the things that they suggested, one of the things we did in the last legislative session, was we actually accomplished most of the suggestions the legislative auditor put forward, and that is that we make the fund legal, and that we have cleared lines of delineation and reporting, and that we have a standard format for everybody to apply for the grants from that fund to accomplish the original purposes of the fund. To that extent, we did not pass judgment on Irie's performance or what it was doing, but said you get to play like everyone else, whether it's a National Renewable Energy Lab or whether it's some company that's got an idea for a long-term storage battery. And so we put Irie in place, and we appropriated some money from a different fund for them to keep them going last couple years. And so just so you know, that's why this was done. Now, I noticed this year there's a couple of bills, including one we're going to discuss here in a moment. We're beginning to undo the good work that the auditor suggested we do. This is one of the first assaults on that, where, in my opinion, we've taken a favorite program, which the U of M has agreed to sunset, by the way, and we've asked the now to undo the work of the last legislature and overrule some of the suggestions of the legislative auditor, and once again directly appropriate money from a private company to a favorite research institute or branch of the University of Minnesota. My only question of the author is, since it's sunsetted anyhow, does your bill presume to order the regents at the university to reinstate the program?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, it wasn't that the university wanted to sunset this program. That's not the characterization at all. The university would indeed like to have kept this program going, and basically through their initiative on the environment would like to go and keep this functioning as much as possible. It may operate under a slightly different name, but they want to keep this going. And the issue is that some of these talented individuals, some of this faculty, some of these professors, some of these research individuals will go someplace else, and we will lose that knowledge base in the state of Minnesota. And the reason why the competitive grant process did not work is it did not give that type of certainty. And I think we're fortunate enough to have one of the people actually help to establish this account in statute with us today. And I don't want to speak on his behalf, but I would say that my interpretation of why we created this fund was partially to go and help fund projects, but also to fund the research that will help to transition us away from some of the types of energy that create the long-term waste problem. And so the funding of Irie greatly accomplishes or helps to lead us in that path of having a premier research institute that helps to develop the different types of technologies that are going to transition us away from some of the types of energy that have huge externalities that we do not account for the true cost of them. And so this is a program that I believe in the merits, and while I hold the auditor in extremely high regard, as you do, we maybe have a fundamental philosophical difference of opinion on what we are allowed to do as a legislature by a fund that was created as a result of an act of the legislature. And so I'm of the impression that this should be done, and the cost of not doing it is extremely detrimental to our state.
Just a minor footnote, there are actually two members of this committee that were on the conference committee that set up the fund.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Follow up?
I do. Just a brief, well, the, I guess the Renewable Development Fund, and noticing the bills that have moved through here this year, the legislature demands that the utility that owns a nuclear power plant pull $19 million a year from its rate base and set it aside for purposes that are spelled out in the RDF fund legislation. If this $5 million goes through, it appears to me, just from doing back-of-the-envelope math, that we've now oversubscribed the RDF fund, once again, if all the bills should become law. Is there any provision for perhaps extracting more money from the utilities, ratepayers that own a nuclear power plant, or are we going to prioritize these at some point? I know this is not general fund money, not necessarily under the purview of this committee, but as long as we're talking about it, let's just talk about it.
My take on that, Representative Beard, is that it is subject to law. It was created by law. When we were dealing with a very difficult issue, and that was nuclear storage, and one of the compromises at the time was that back then, in exchange for what we all thought was temporary, this nuclear storage in casks, I think it was 16 casks, in exchange for $500,000 per cask that would be used for purposes of developing renewable energy and research. And I think Representative Falk did a good job of describing the original intent. So it is subject to law in the view of many of us, and that's been the history of both political parties when they've been in power using the fund for that purpose. So Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, I remember the other comment that Representative Falk reminded me of. The spent fuel that's being stored at the pad, you're exactly right, is being paid for already by a federal levy on all ratepayers of utility companies that have nuclear generating facilities. And the feds have been, of course, we all agree, bipartisanly very derelict in their duty. I think Representative Atkins actually has a bill to capture some of that money back for purposes used in this state. I think it's several hundred million dollars a year that are extracted from the ratepayers to go to Washington. Lord knows what happens to it there, but it's not being spent to address the problem. So the $19 million that we're taking from Xcel now is on top of what the feds are taking to specifically address the problem. Originally, oh, by the way, it was $500,000 for every cast that was put on the pad a few years ago before the party I belonged to became in power. That was changed to just $500,000 per cast authorized per year, so that's why it jumped from a few million to $19 million a year. So all the things that we've authorized, they're now paying in advance for. So that's the problem we have, is a little pot of money, and I know how pots of money get around here. It's very difficult for legislators to keep their hands off of them. So I'm sorry that the bill, while an important one, undoes some of the good work the legislature did to put the RDF protections in play.
Perhaps what I'd be interested in the university's position on the sunset. There seemed to be some discussion about that. Who would be the best one to comment about that? That's a question that I have. I've got an interest in this whole issue going back to that conference committee.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Todd Iverson. I represent the University of Minnesota. The university took the action of putting IREE into what I would call cold stasis because the funding source was eliminated by the legislature last year. We would obviously be interested if in continuing the good work of the program, should the legislature choose to reinstate that funding source. We have tremendous researchers working in this area. It's enabled the university to create, as the report stated, a real foothold in this subject area, and it's one that we have great interest in continuing to work on. But this was the sole source of funding for that program. And so we had no other option but to discontinue it because the funding source had been eliminated.
Okay, thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, I happen to represent the ratepayers that pay into the RDF fund and always concerned about how that money is being used and what it means for increasing the price of electricity for the people that I represent. So I'm just curious, on the $5 million, what does that get you from the University of Minnesota? How many FTEs are we talking about? What all is involved with that? Can you tell me that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Anderson. To first address the philosophical issue, we have a long-term storage facility in the state of Minnesota of which every single Minnesotan bears some risk, not just the Xcel ratepayers. And so if we have a leak of one of the casks or we have any type of issue, it's not just the people who pay Xcel rates that are going to be at risk. You know, the radiation or some of the pollution doesn't stop at the ratepayer's service territory lines. So I want to make that clear, that the reason why this fund benefits the entire state is because every single Minnesotan bears some risk for the actions of one company and for the perceived benefit of one group of ratepayers. Because if they're getting this perceived, which in my mind is not overly cheap electricity, then we, if we want to talk about market forces and externalities, we have to account for that externality. There is no other form of energy that creates as toxic as long-term source of waste as nuclear power, and every single Minnesotan bears part of that risk. Consequently, that's why I think it was fair and prudent to go and put aside this money to make sure that Minnesotans as a whole are benefiting and we're finding ways to reduce or slow down the increased creation of that waste. Beyond that point, I would not be the person to probably ask or answer how many FTEs and who and what type of program this is funding, but a person from the University of Minnesota would be much more capable and adequate to answer that question. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would actually ask one of the people from the university.
Yeah, you could identify yourself for the record, and did you hear the question?
Yes. I'm Lewis Gilbert. I'm the Managing Director and Chief Operating Officer in the Institute on the Environment. Institute on the Environment administers what was the IRE program. The question about the number of FTEs affected is a difficult one. We have laid off three people have lost their jobs as a result of the loss in funding. Those were primarily administrative positions. The funding is primarily research funding. Our administrative costs are in the neighborhood of 15% of the expenditures. And I can't give you an exact number of researchers who have been affected by this, but it's in the neighborhood of several tens of researchers. The steadiness of the IRE funding has historically allowed us to develop a quite coordinated and powerful research team. In addition to FTEs within the university, there are FTEs beyond the university related to the spinning off of the research that we've done and expenditure of the support for research staff and those sorts of positions. It's difficult to give an exact number. I would have to do some further digging to give you a better number than the numbers I've laid out.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. What was
Lewis Gilbert.
Mr. Gilbert, you know, I think that would be helpful to know. You know, I just did a quick back of the napkin calculation. Those three administrative people, it looks, if you said it was 15% of the expenditures, which would be $5 million, you're looking at $750,000 divided by three. You got $250,000 positions that we're looking at. I would truly like to know. Obviously, you've been having this operation up and running, and I want to know what the $5 million is getting the folks in Minnesota. And in response to Representative Falk, you know, I think that if this is truly about all Minnesotans having a share in it, then all Minnesotans should be putting into the fund, if that's the concern, or something to that effect. So, you know, I'm a little concerned about what this does. I'm surprised, actually, that this wasn't part of the University of Minnesota's budget request. Obviously, this changes the perspective for the U, and as a legislative body, we've had a history of trying to have equal share of what the U of M gets versus what the Minsku system gets, and I see this as the University of Minnesota getting more than the Minsku system. So those are just my thoughts, and no need to respond. I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Dittmer?
I pass.
Okay, Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Falk. I'll preface this by saying that I support the purposes of IRE and their efforts in the past. My two questions would be, number one, can they not compete for an RDF grant? And number two is, what percentage of their efforts go towards electricity generation or that realm? Because I think that's what the RDF account was designed to deal with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, they could compete, but the uncertainty causes some of the top-tier talent to potentially go other places where there is more certainty. And really, we had built a premier world-class institution at the University of Minnesota, and I wish that Richard Hemmingson was here to speak about that, because it truly is. And an representative Yarusso spoke highly of some of the professors that she knew of, and some of the work they're doing is just not being done elsewhere. And so, you know, when you have talent of that caliber, they can go anywhere in the world. And we had basically created an area where they had the ability, with some certainty, to fund different types of research projects. With respect to the different types of investment by category, and to Representative Anderson, too, I would encourage her to read this report, get a copy of the 2012 report. A lot of your questions will be answered there. But the investments by category here show about 50% were in bioenergy, 14.4% solar, WGH, which I'm assuming is waste gas, whereas
I think that's hydro.
No, that's there's hydro at about 9.6%, but the WGH.
I don't remember that.
I think that was waste gas, and it breaks these down to PEC and conservation energy improvement for 6.3%. Bioenergy and bioproducts. I have to look at the rest of the report here. But a significant portion of about half of it actually was spent on biofuels research.
Thank you.
I have a question, Representative Falk. We're trying to track these dollars, and it looks like $5 million for fiscal year 12. There's 6 months that remains. And then for 13 and 14. So could you explain what the intent is with fiscal year 12, because we're very close to the end of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intent was not to restore funding for fiscal year 12, but would have been for, as I understand this, the calendar years 13 and 14. And the bill, while very simply drafted, simply deleted the 2011 and inserted 2014 in addition to the kind of standard notwithstanding subdivision 1 paragraph G language, and at the very end the section is effective the day following enactment. So my intent was for the years 13, calendar years 13 and 14.
Are you ready to explain what we need? Mr. Sullivan, I think we've got a technical issue here that we should resolve while we still have some others with questions then. Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and Representative Falk, I think to clarify the author's intent, additional language is needed on the effective date, page 2, line 14. So the amended language would read, this section is effective the day following final enactment and requires allocations on July 1st, 2013 and July 1st, 2014.
Mr. Chairman, I'm amenable to that language and actually would encourage that incorporation.
Okay. I think at this point we need to actually have a motion. Can you repeat that language so everybody has it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, the technical language is page 2, line 14, before the second period, insert, and requires allocations on July 1, 2013, and July 1, 2014.
Okay, Representative Hausman.
I'll move that.
Okay, Representative Hausman moves the language change. Then any discussion on that? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, that clarifies the, I think it was the author's intent then, so we're okay on that. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gilbert, is it?
Yes.
Mr. Gilbert, how many administrators did you say you were impacted by this when the funds were cut?
Mr. Gilbert?
2.5 senior administrative officers and a staff person.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gilbert, and what's the percentage of administrators that you just said were in this program?
100%.
It's 100%. So, Mr. Gilbert, you've identified a system of identifying administrators within the University of Minnesota. I would suggest you share this with the regents. They're spending $500,000 to devise a system to identify administrators. You apparently have one. Maybe if you shared it, it would save them $500,000. You don't need to respond.
Okay. I think that goes back to an early discussion. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's kind of a question where, I mean, if the U wants this, why wasn't this in their budget proposal? Or maybe it was and didn't make the cut or something. But it just seems to me that with this proposal, we're going around the higher ed committee. I mean, this, or has this, Mr. Chairman, I guess I haven't followed the track of this, but has this been through the higher ed committee?
Mr. Iverson?
Mr. Chairman, Todd Iverson again for the university. Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, this particular fund has always gone through the Energy Committee. It has been a special research fund. It's one of the few state-sponsored research funds. The way this fund is always operated is that this money has been designated for energy research. There was a competitive process put out to researchers. They applied for it. It was externally reviewed by energy experts from around the country that scored these projects and awarded grants based on those scores of those external reviewers, and then those grants were given out to those researchers. This is traditionally run through the Energy Committee and has not run through the Higher Ed Committee. Does not mean that it couldn't, but that it just never historically has.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Iverson, was this part of the governor's budget proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, it was not part of the governor's proposal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that, and apparently we have something that the governor did not see fit to put in his budget proposal. We're adding more administrators for the University of Minnesota, and it hasn't gone to higher ed. It's a bit troubling that we have a situation here where you're expanding the size of administration at the U with no input from the higher ed committee, and the governor did not recommend this either, so just a bit troubling.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, this is not state dollars. This is not general fund money. It's from a different account. It typically has stood on its own, and this is not the type of money that we spend at the university to go and help with tuition or basically for the normal functioning of the university. This is highly specific. We are bringing researchers and specialty faculty to the University of Minnesota that at the time no one else was doing, and we built the core competency there to go and aid in research efforts. And really, this is to the benefit of a number of our businesses, some of our largest businesses that are going to benefit from the research that is being done. They can take that core research and expand it and commercialize it. And so this fits in kind of a little different model. And I don't want to go and misstate anybody's intentions, but it would be a real shame to lose this. And simply because it was not put into the budgets that deal with state general fund dollars does not mean that this program does not have importance or should not be continued. And because of the unique situation in which it has been funded, it is a bit autonomous in that nature. So I want to make sure that that is clear, and Mr. Iverson may be able to comment to that point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, I want to clarify that should this fund be restored, that none of the administrators will be rehired. It is the intent of the Institute on the Environment to run this within the resources that they currently have, and those positions would not be backfilled.
Okay, we have Representative Davids said it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Holbert.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Representative Luna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk just mentioned that businesses and that were supportive of this from the research that went on. I wondered if we could hear from a representative of the business community about this.
Did everybody hear that? There's a question if there would be a representative of the business community that would be willing to come down and share their position. I don't know if one person can speak for the entire business community, but we'll see what happens. You could explain who you represent.
Yeah.
It's like when I meet with some of my local business people, if there's five in a room, sometimes there's five opinions on a given issue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Benjamin Gerber. I am Energy Policy Manager for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'll speak on behalf of our specific policy towards this. We worked very hard with the stakeholders last year to address what Senator Rosen and I believe Representative Hackbarth did and made changes. According to what the OLA recommended, I'd highly suggest reading that report. And it spelled out this is a private fund within Excel, and it's the legislature appropriating money from that fund. It's unique. I looked at similar funds across the country. We're the only state that makes direct legislative appropriations out of a private fund. We believe that the competitive process, I'm also, there's statutory members on the RDF advisory board, so we make recommendations that are not binding to Excel. There's members of the environmental community as well. I believe we spent a lot, considerable effort over the summer and into the fall devising a RFP that has been released that allowed for universities across Minnesota to apply to this fund in a competitive process. And I believe that that works, and it would be upsetting to see all that work be taken out based on the way this is written. I mean, they can apply like anybody else. There's a specific reservation in the fund for higher education, so those dollars are still there. We made sure that we believed that there was enough money to continue the efforts, and We think that as businesses apply to this fund through a competitive process, so should the universities.
Any further, Representative Lund?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to Mr. Gerber for that. So, just to Representative Faulk, you know, why opposition to having a competitive process for the grants?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, I want to reiterate, too, that I do not believe the Chamber of Commerce speaks on behalf of all businesses that have benefited from the work that's done at the University of Minnesota. But once again, we had built a top tier of talent in this field. We were on the map, so to speak, worldwide for people who wanted to do cutting-edge research in the areas of renewable energy because of the program, the funding source, and just the work that had been put in to develop it. Consequently, when you have actually spent the resources and developed that level of talent, I believe it's important to keep that level of talent, because if you don't, somebody else will. So whether it's another university in this country, another university somewhere else in the world, some of these researchers are going to go to those places where they have the stability. And when we go and start piecemealing up some of these research efforts, well, I don't disagree that some of the efforts are valid at our other institutions in the state. When you have basically the shining example of how to do research and bring people together well, you really shouldn't lose that. I'm trying to think of kind of a good simile to explain this, but you know, when you have a Steve Jobs type person or a Steve Jobs type of group of people, you wouldn't want to let them go someplace else, because the benefits that they bring and just the research and the innovation and the creativity that you've assembled is often hard to repeat. And that's one of the reasons why I wish Mr. Hemmingson were here to speak about that, and some of the folks that actually have worked with these researchers, and some of the things they're doing nobody else in the world is doing. And we're giving up that competitive advantage by letting this program sunset, or, as they said, go into kind of a deep storage or cold storage.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't belabor the point. Just, you know, to reiterate that I think if this is top-tier talent, I imagine they would fare very well in a competitive environment and competitive process. So I think the legislative auditor's advice is something that ought to be heeded.
You know, having you alluded to a couple of people that were on that conference committee years ago when this fund was established, and a couple of things that I would point out as one of the five members at the table, what we would have called then NSP, now XL, NSP, Prairie Island debate, was probably one of the most contentious issues that I've ever been involved in my 41 years in the legislature. But the way I was coming at that as a conferee was that it is a regulated industry. And as I said earlier, the big issue at the time was how we would handle the storage of nuclear waste. And we did spend a little time on that earlier in this meeting. And that's why the fund was created. And it was, as Representative Faulk then described, the purpose was, by and large, for research purposes, and that's how we got down this road. But I would say it is a regulated industry, and I understand what the comments were on the part of the chamber in terms of it being a private fund, but it is subject to law, and I think that's an important part of that historical discussion, at least. We have several people that have questions. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Faulk, I'm trying to understand. We made this a competitive process. You're talking about the great work the university's done. But I'm trying to understand, if they've done such a great job in the past, why are they afraid of the competitive grant process, and why do you have to earmark the terrific work the university is doing? Why can't they continue with a competitive grant if they're doing such a great job?
Representative Faulk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara. Once again, the uncertainty has caused problems for the university to keep and retain some of this top-tier talent. And I do think our utilities typically do a pretty good job. But as the technology is developed to either reduce our energy usage or to go and significantly change the model in which we do business, I have to wonder if it's in their best interest to fund some of the best technology or research that's going to provide a competitor to their guaranteed marketplace. And so I have some concerns about leaving this whole discretion with the utility that is administering the fund. And one of the things that Representative Hilty had worked very hard was to set this program up, and it really had become a shining example of how to do research well. And like I read from the report, Mr. Hemmingson sums up at the end that it's really going to be a shame that we let this disappear when we're going to soon realize that we never should have done that in the first place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Falk. So if I understand this correctly, we want to take away the ability of all the Minsky schools to compete for this grant, including Winona, Mankato, whatever other Minsky schools. The university should have the earmark for them, and we should take away the opportunity for the Minsky schools to be able to compete on this. I'll wait till you're done conferring with the University of Minnesota there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, while I appreciate all the work that our Minsky schools do, our University of Minnesota has a slightly different purpose. It is a land-grant institution, but it's also a premier research institution. And some of the things that the University of Minnesota does in different areas, whether it's medical, whether it's biotechnology, are much different missions than what the Minsky system does. And so we have to acknowledge that Minsky, for all the good things it does, it may not have the same type of mission statement, and it may not have the same depth of reach when it comes to basic research that the University of Minnesota has and the resources the University of Minnesota has to go and bring in. One of the things I forgot to mention or failed to mention, too, is the dollars we've allocated to this program have been matched typically about 3-to-1 with other sources of money. And so we've been able to leverage nearly $120 million in additional renewable energy research support to the state of Minnesota as a result of the money we've expended from the Renewable Development Fund to IRE. And so, to try to get back to your point, there is a different mission here. The University of Minnesota is a premier research institute. It does that in a number of categories, renewable energy, which once again, maybe a philosophical difference for some people, but for those of us that actually acknowledge we have to address climate change and acknowledge that renewable energy is important and we have to move forward if we're going to transition away from fossil fuel-based energy and from types of energy that have long-term waste storage issues, then we should be funding that research and developing those jobs and creating that industry right here in Minnesota, because it's a growing industry that has huge growth opportunity, that has jobs with increasing wages, that have the benefits that we want when we want to bring industry to Minnesota. And so to stick our heads in the sand and say that funding this is not important, I think is a huge mistake and would be a huge disservice to our state.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Falk, but I would encourage you to go back and listen to the tape of what you all just said. Most of it talked about competition and the market system and the good things we should do to deal with climate and different issues. Nowhere do you talk about the fact that we should guarantee a specific institution, one of us, that it's many of our alma mater, and we're very troubled with what's going on at that institution. And because of that, a couple of years ago, Representative Hackbart and Senator Rosen said, maybe we should make it competitive. Are we afraid of that? Is our university today so afraid they got to bring their high-powered lobbyist here and talk about you carrying legislation to guarantee them a $5 million earmark? If they're doing a great job, let them win the competition. What's wrong with that? They're winning the competition and the cost of their administration. Can they win a grant about energy? Give me a break here. How about we treat people fair and square in the entire state?
Mr. Iverson, you came to the table. Did you want to comment?
Just a brief comment, Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara. We've read the legislative auditor's report. We've heard comments from a number of different legislators around this, and we are very interested in having our colleagues in Minsky, who do some great work, apply for these grants and be judged on the same basis as our researchers, and would make the promise to the legislature that into the future, this will be an open competition amongst any Institute of Higher Education from Minnesota that wants to apply for these grants. As I stated before, these grants were judged by external evaluators, and we're more than happy to enter into the competition. I think from the university's perspective, it's we don't doubt our partners at Excel have all of the best intentions of dedicating a certain portion of the RDF dollars to higher ed and the board. At this point, it's into the future. Whether that will continue is a real question. This does give the university and the energy research community an amount of certainty around that these dollars will be available for future research and that they can hire research assistants, graduate students, and continue that research into the future. And I appreciate the committee's time. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hulsman.
Mr. Chair, there was a question earlier about the business community, and we heard from one segment of the business community. I understand there might be one member of the business community who can speak directly to how they benefit from that partnership, if you'd be willing to.
I think he's sitting down now. That's fine. Being that we, as I indicated, that you know, sometimes there's multiple voices in the business community. And I did get a note that was unsigned, but I can recognize the handwriting. It says if you met with five attorneys, you would get at least 10 opinions. That is from an attorney, by the way. Okay, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for an opportunity to have a few words. My name is Ralph Jacobson. I am the owner of Innovative Power Systems, solar installation and design company that I founded in 1991 after graduating from the University of Minnesota Materials Science and Chemical Engineering Department. And I really became interested in photovoltaics at Materials Science because there was just a ton of research results hitting the technical journals at that point. Unfortunately, there was no one in the department to, in terms of professors, who was working on solar energy issues, and so I really decided at that point when I graduated to go out and start a business because I thought somebody needed to actually figure out how to make it available for the community, for the early adopters. Since that time, I do get the newsletter of the Material Science and Chemical Engineering Department, and I have been overjoyed to see that several, I would say half a dozen of the professors and postdocs at Material Science are now doing research, and this is basic research. It's not the kind of thing that comes to a business like mine. And so you're hearing from the other end of the business community. I'm the solar installer that buys equipment on the market that's market ready and that's priced, you know, for the people that I'm trying to sell it to. And so IREE has funded the basic research that I've been able to see at Material Science and Chemical Engineering, and that's the kind of thing that filters into companies like 3M that build on that basic research and do applied research. So I have seen the benefit just because I get the newsletter. And the other thing I would say is that once a year, IREE would host a conference down at the St. Paul River Center. And for a small business person like me who, you know, I have opportunities to go to California or Germany or New York or someplace if I want to spend the big bucks to go to those conferences. But to have a conference right here every year where they would invite people in from elsewhere, from Colorado, and give us a chance to have, you know, face-to-face dialogue, find out what's going on, was enormously valuable to me and made me feel connected to the larger solar energy community in terms of basic research in Colorado or California or elsewhere. And also to talk face-to-face with people at the electric utilities and with the other stakeholders in the solar energy, let's say, arena. So that's been my experience as a small business owner.
Well, thank you. We have Representative Hulsman is at Representative Mahoney, and then he's the last one I have on the list. I think what I'd like to do after Representative Mahoney is ask Representative Falk for any concluding comments, and then we'll vote on the Wagenius motion as amended. So, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk. Now, I want to make sure, you know, I apologize for being here just a little late, but the renewable development account, where the $5 million is coming out of, is a charge to XL Energy ratepayers, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, that is correct.
So, in some of the research, the claim is 300 high-tech jobs. How many of those are in the XL Energy's ratepayers district?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, perhaps you missed my earlier comments, but I did a little bit of a soliloquy about why this is supposed to benefit the entire state of Minnesota, because ultimately the entire state of Minnesota bears the risk for housing long-term radioactive waste within the state. If you have a problem with one of the casks or at one of the facilities, the potential for pollution or impact doesn't stop at the dedicated service territory's boundaries. The environment doesn't exactly acknowledge those things. And so one of the issues and why this program was set up is because all Minnesotans bear some level of risk for housing for long-term gas storage within the state. And we're going to see that at both our facilities now. So while I understand that some people have concerns, perhaps, that this is being spent outside of Xcel's territory, we have to look at both externalities here. If supposedly the nuclear power is so cheap and benefiting the Xcel ratepayers to the degree that it supposedly does, then that lowered price of energy should be one benefit in and of itself enough to go and, you know, account for its utilization. Whereas the potential problem that faces all Minnesotans, the only benefit we're getting for people who are not Xcel ratepayers is the fact that some money is set aside into this fund to go and help us transition away, hopefully, from the usage of nuclear power, which creates a waste problem, which we have no answer to right now. Supposedly this is temporary storage, but to all indications it has become permanent storage because there is no long-term national storage. So I think it perhaps is a false premise that this money should only be spent in Xcel service territory because it only is purchased or paid for by Xcel ratepayers. Ultimately, all Minnesotans are paying some brunt of it. If I had my complete and total ability to go and make some changes to this, I would actually ask that only Xcel shareholders pay the cost and it not be a rate recoverable expense, which would be a different bill, but wouldn't be that hard to change or to make that change in the law. Right now, Xcel shareholders are benefiting exclusively from this supposedly cheap power. These are hugely costly assets. When you look at rates of return on electric service, it's really not the selling of power, but how many assets you have in the asset base that you earn a return on. So by having those nuclear facilities in their asset base, they earn a huge amount of money for their shareholders. Consequently, the ones most benefiting, those shareholders, probably should be the ones paying. And so I'd happily work with you on something to go and change this from being paid for by the ratepayers to the shareholders.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
Falk, there's never been a leak out of one of the dry cast storage. There's never been a pickup of the radiation at the 10 man, which is the, I can't remember exactly how far away it is from the plant. So it's based on a false premise as far as I'm concerned. So it's a philosophical difference. But you still haven't answered, are any of those 300 high-tech jobs in Xcel Energy's rate-paying district, are any of the 190 high-tech companies that were started in the Xcel ratepayers' district? Seems like I'm paying for it. My 40,000 constituents are paying for it. Hausmann's, Clark. I could go on the other side of the aisle. There's a few over there. Are any of those in the Xcel Energy ratepayers district, and if so, how many?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I don't have that information. Perhaps someone from the university could speak to that.
I'm a high-powered lobbyist.
Representative Falk, I don't think nobody's stepping forward with that information. I don't know if that's something we could find out or not.
Perhaps they could provide it to us. I don't have access to it.
Representative Mahoney, any further questions?
I'll pass at that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then, Representative Wagenius renews. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Falk, when I got elected in 96 was my first session, we were the 12th lowest utility paying state in the nation. Do you know where we are now with you know, all this green energy and stuff like that. I was on the conference committee for 10 and 10, but it's my understanding we're 27th. And so far, Representative Mahoney and I have been working very hard on creating jobs and improving our economy. I figure that this high increase in the cost of energy is a detriment to getting jobs. And I'd like to know where you think solar is in comparison to the average power produced by Xcel Energy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I would happily take about 2 hours to explain the differences in renewable energy and the incremental costs and the fact that we have fully depreciated assets when we talk about new generation. Renewables are the most cost-effective we can do, and we've had numerous pieces of testimony about that in the Energy Committee. And one of the things that you know, has been a key driver in the cost increases in the last few years has been the increase in diesel fuel, because we have to go and get the coal to the plant somehow. Those fuel surcharges are passed on. Once you actually make the investment in renewable energies, once you install the infrastructure, with wind there is no fuel cost, with solar there is no fuel cost. With some of these other things, we actually utilize resources we have here, whether it's biomass. I could go on for this about, you know, a couple hours if you'd like, but you know, perhaps it's just a different philosophical difference. But if you want to go and look at the roughly $19 million here over the billions of dollars spent on energy, you know, in the state of Minnesota, confined strictly to the debate at hand, this would be a minuscule, if not barely minuscule, amount. And it's basically to account for the externality of the fact that we are housing a long-term radioactive source of waste in the state, of which was supposed to be temporary but has now, for the most part, become permanent because we have no federal option to go and remove it to.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll ask the question again. What is the cost of solar energy versus the average cost of what Xcel Energy, and we do have natural gas that doesn't have to be using fossil fuels to get it to the market. It goes through a pipeline. Where does this compare? I'd like to know, are we pricing ourselves out of the market with the highest cost energy we have in the state of Minnesota solar?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I'm sorry, but that has nothing to do with this bill. We're funding or attempting to fund research at the University of Minnesota, which helps to commercialize and to perhaps make some of these forms of energy more affordable and more efficient. But, I mean, if you want to have a whole energy debate, we could, but really the contents of this bill deal with the funding of IRE.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Again, then, Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 879 be recommended to pass as amended and be placed in the General Register. Any further discussion? Representative Falk, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members, for the good debate, and I appreciate your support.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, then all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
Motion carried.
Division.
Division has been requested. All those in favor signify by raising your hand. Okay, we got it. No. On the nose, yeah. Vote was 13 yes, 13 no, so the motion did not prevail.
Oh, he just came in.
Why don't you vote again?
Mr. Chair.
I'd like to move reconsideration of the vote on House File 879. I voted on the prevailing side. I know. That was a joke.
To reconsider is before us. Any discussion on the motion to reconsider? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the motion that House File 879, or no, we're reconsidering. We got to reconsider. Then we have to deal with the motion first. So all those in favor of reconsider the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carried.
Division
has been Okay, all those in favor of reconsideration, raise your hand. Okay, those opposed. Okay, the motion to reconsider passes 14 to 11. We now have then the motion by Representative Wagenius that House File 879 recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. Any discussion? Representative Hackbarth.
Roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
Great.
Okay, clerk. Clerk will begin the roll.
Carlson.
Aye.
Abler, excused. Anderson?
No.
Amsel? Atkins?
Yes.
Beard?
No.
Reinhart?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Davids?
No.
Dabney?
Aye.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Hillstrom, excused. Holberg?
No.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Huntley, Kahn,
yes.
Nancheski,
yes.
Loon,
no.
Mahoney,
pass.
Mariani,
yes.
Marquardt,
yes.
McNamara,
no.
Mullery,
aye.
Nornis, Paymar,
aye.
Pulowski,
no.
Poppy,
no.
Simon?
Yes.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Woodard?
No.
Okay. Yes.
Lancheski, we weren't clear on your vote.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, motion prevails 15 to 13. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
We now have Representative Kelly's bill before us. He told me it would take him about a minute and a half, just dealing with energy, but I think Representative Beard was prepared to put the bill before us.
Mr. Chairman, being co-author, I'll move House File 1000. Be recommended to pass and put on the general register.
Okay, motion is before us, and Representative Kelly, if you would explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We currently have a mandate that puts dollars into the Conservation Improvement Program Research and Development Fund, which matches approximately 1% of the power produced in the state of Minnesota. What House File 1000 is requesting is that we have an appropriation of $500,000 go directly to the CERT program, which is the clean energy resource teams across the state. Their mission is really to connect communities, individuals, businesses, to make sure that we're using these dollars most efficiently and help actually with these conservation programs themselves. So I guess what we're asking is if we have created this fund, this is the most appropriate way for us to deliver those funds in the most efficient manner.
Any discussion? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Representative Kelly, thanks for bringing this forward. remember several years ago the legislature thought was in their purview or deemed it to be in their purview to order utilities to spend money from their revenue stream to make their customers buy less of their product. I know only the legislature could dream something up like that, but it is the law of the land. So since we make municipals and cooperatives do the same thing, comply with the same law we require the investor-owned utilities to do, and they're generally not staffed up as deeply as the big companies headquartered in downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul, the cooperative power agencies and municipal power agencies particularly benefit from the work that these people do at the CERTS team. They actually help municipals and cooperatives apply with the law of the land, and for that reason, members funding it from this revenue stream. Representative Kelly, thank you for getting the revenue stream correct. We appreciate it. I would heartily encourage you to vote aye on the motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have an issue on the years here. Mr. Marks, maybe you can pose the question from Mr. Chair and Representative Kelly, just to make sure on the effective date on 2.6, 2.7, the fiscal year that would commence after July 15, 2013 would be July 1st, 2014, and it would be fiscal 15, just to make sure that's the intent.
Actually, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Marks. The date Kelly. Should actually be July 1st, 2013. That is a...
Mr. Chair, I believe it should be June 30th if the intent of 2013 if the intent is to have it fiscal 14.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Marks, once again, you are correct. That would be June 30th, and if we could make that correction, I would appreciate that.
Okay. We got it ready. Everybody understand what the motion will be, Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and members, the motion would be to amend page 2, line 7, delete July 15, and insert June 30.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
As opposed? Or opposed? Motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill? Okay, seeing none then, Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 1000, the first engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Fortman, I announced at the beginning that you're very welcome, Representative Kelly, that we would adjourn at about 20 minutes after. We can maybe fudge a little bit, 25 minutes after, because rules meets at 11:30. We won't be able to complete your bill today for a couple of reasons. One, we need a fiscal note. I think what I'll simply ask you to do, because it is Earth Day, if you could recap as best you can in the time that remains, and then we'll have to reschedule the bill when we have a fiscal note. So, Representative Hartman, if you... maybe I should put the bill properly before us. Excuse me, Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so are you saying there won't be any further votes in committee today? I know there's some scheduling conflicts with some other events as well. I'm just...
This is probably a bill that will create at least as much discussion as the other one. And there's only 5 to 10 minutes that remain, so because it is Earth Day, and as I announced at the beginning of the meeting or early in the meeting, I wanted to touch on these three energy bills today in recognition of the day and the number of people that were here. Quite frankly, took a little bit longer than we had anticipated on the first bill. But secondly, we don't have a fiscal note yet on the amendment that would be proposed, so we wouldn't be taking action even if we completed discussion. But if Representative Fortman would like to just give us an overview of the bill in the time that remains, and then we will lay the bill over and adjourn at that point.
Mr. Chair, if I might, in reviewing the testimony or advice of the bill author on the floor on Saturday, and then actually looking at the changes that the language makes, I would just reiterate that we in the minority think that the scope of changes and going through this bill, the experts are in the Energy Committee, and we wish that the chair and the author reconsider, as you're waiting for a fiscal note, actually bringing this back to the Energy Committee, because they're not just little simple changes or deletions, from my understanding.
I can talk to the author. My intent at this point is twofold, one being that it was Energy Day. Wanted to, when we discussed this on the House floor, make sure the bill remained before us for that reason. Secondly, I can visit a bit with the author, but I did do a little research on delete everything amendments, and under Chair Knobloch, and I'm not talking about just amendments, just delete everything, 10. Under your chairmanship, delete everything amendments, there were three, including one that was the stadium, if you'll recall that, which was loaded with policy.
Which
and
was orders from headquarters, as you
well,
can understand.
Well, whatever, whatever the source, I'm just pointing out that this is the committee of last resort, and this is where we sometimes have discussion, and there's a long history of taking up various amendments. What I have had as a goal is to make sure that the bills are ready for the House floor as best we can. And that will be our goal. But just like the earlier amendment or bill, we'll make sure that there's ample time for discussion on this bill when it comes back before us. But it won't come back before us until we get the fiscal note. But the reason it's here without a fiscal note is Earth Day.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, the issue of the delete all, one of the factors is the amount of substantive changes in them. And best we can tell, there's about 13 policy or substantive changes from the second engrossment to the delete all, and that's quite a few.
Okay, well, now we're down to about 6 minutes, and just to put the bill before us for discussion purposes, Representative Adkins moves that House File 956 second engrossment be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. That's just going to put the bill before us. If you can do us a quick walkthrough and maybe highlight some of the changes that are in the bill and or amendment, we'll just have a general discussion with the time that remains, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Ways and Means Committee. The bill before you, House File 956, is the House Omnibus Energy Bill. The bulk of it is the Governor's Energy Bill. The Governor called upon us in his State of the State to stand on the shoulders of the legislators who had come before and take the next step in furthering renewable energy in the state of Minnesota. 16 other states in the country have a solar energy or distributed generation standard. That is the next step forward in renewable energy for the state of Minnesota. We have traditionally been a leader. We would be behind these other states in our progress, but I believe that it is time for Minnesota to join these 16 other states. The most recent state to move on this was the state of New Jersey. Governor Chris Christie in July of 2012 signed a 4% by 2028 standard for the state of New Jersey, a state that is very similar to us in solar resource. The bill has three main provisions. It encourages the development of solar energy in one key way. It sets a standard. It would say in the state of, in one key way, it sets a standard. It would say in the state of Minnesota by the year 2016, we would have 0.5% of our energy coming from solar. By 2020, it would be 2%, and by 2025, it would be 4%. At this particular point in time, the bill only applies to investor-owned utility, and that standard would not apply at all to municipal power agencies or cooperative associations. The bill also encourages smaller-scale development of solar in the form of community and residential solar. If we just set a standard and did nothing else, utilities would build fields of solar panels. And what the intention of the bill is to incent development for small businesses and residential owners. And so there's a community solar provision. And then with regard to the residential arena, there is a production incentive. Mr. Chair, as you served on the Prairie Island Conference Committee, you're well aware of the purposes of the Renewable Development Fund and how it was that Minnesota jump-started our wind industry. And the way we did it was we set a goal for Xcel had to purchase a certain amount of megawatts of wind capacity, and we also put in place a renewable energy production incentive. We called those REPIs. There's a SEPI in the bill. There's a solar energy production incentive building on the work that the legislature did in 1994. And I would like to just close by saying that the work that we did in the wind arena was a resounding success. The utilities, whether they were investor-owned or municipal power agencies or cooperatives, told us from 1994 through the action we took in 2007, we can't do this, we can't possibly accommodate this much wind, it's too expensive, the system can't handle it. In November of 2012, of the megawatt hours of energy that were generated in the state of Minnesota, 850,000 megawatt hours were from wind, 804,000 were from nuclear, 386,000 were from natural gas peaking plants, and still the big hulk in the room, 1,983,000 megawatts were from coal. We were told it couldn't happen, that we couldn't displace that much coal-fired power, but we did. We have a very successful wind industry in Minnesota, and it's time to build our solar industry. There's a lot of jobs, and we can have those jobs here in our state as we create clean energy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. You did an amazing job on a very complex bill in just a few minutes. For those of you in the audience, I assume all the people with white badges are here for Earth Day. I want to thank you for coming, and as I say, the intent was to discuss three bills. We got about 2 1/4 in. For members of the committee, watch your emails for when we'll meet again. We do have a few other miscellaneous bills we'll be taking up, as well as the pension bill. So we will be continuing to meet. With that, meeting adjourned.